right. This is ABC News Powerhouse Politics Podcast. I'm ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Carl.
And I'm ABC News Political Director Rick Klein.
Rick, we are a week out, and this is the beginning of a new chapter in American broadcast history, and certainly podcast history, the beginning of our daily podcast. And it looks almost like we have an entirely new race out there.
Well, something happened on Friday. You know, we're coasting toward the finish line here. And then the bombshell, the director of the FBI coming out with this unusual, doesn't even begin to address, John, what this is, blindsides everyone with the announcement that there are additional emails that have been found. And, of course, that sparks a whole nother round and the involvement of Anthony Weiner and all the rest. And, my God, here we are. And all of a sudden, it looks like we have a race again, John. Do you think that's real? I mean, is this the ultimate October surprise?
I'm not convinced it's real. But let me just say, for this edition of Powerhouse Politics, we are going to try to do something that we do occasionally. We're going to try to get into the meat and the substance of what is actually going on. So we're going to go to our man at the Justice Department, Mike Levine, who, you know, basically actually really knows what's happening over there. He spends his days talking to justice officials, FBI types. So we're going to try to learn what exactly is going on with Comey, because Lord knows his letter to Congress leaves a lot of questions unanswered. And then we're going to talk to a friend of the Powerhouse Politics podcast who used to work as the spokesperson over at the Justice Department, Mr. Matt Miller, who, to my surprise, Rick, I don't know if this has shocked you, But Mr. Miller has, like many of the others on the Democratic side, has basically gone to war with FBI Director Comey.
Oh, Matt's going rogue. We'll get into it with him. But I'm struck by this as well, because there's a lot of responses you can have to the development on Friday. And you're right, outright warfare. Harry Reid even going so far as to say that Director Comey is violating federal law, the Hatch Act, and is secretly hiding information that would reflect on Mr. Trump. He is saying pretty explicitly that Comey's trying to throw the election to Trump. Over the line accusation to make. Harry Reid's done a couple of those in the past, but that is really something to come from the Senate Democratic leader. And of course, all of the Clinton team is out there saying the issue here isn't with them; it's with the director of the FBI.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Hillary Clinton herself has essentially attacked the FBI director from the podium at her rallies. She's, you know, isn't this strange, this timing? And she's really leaned into him, which is interesting because, as we'll talk to Matt about, I mean, you know, this is a 10-year term for the FBI director. He's got another 8 left. So, you know, unless he's fired by an incoming President Clinton, if she wins, you know, you've got a potential for an incredibly frosty relationship between the president of the United States and, you know, the top law enforcement official in the land. So I think that is all interesting. I just one thing I have to say that I have found interesting in watching this unfold is that Comey has now managed to be attacked, quite viciously attacked, by both presidential candidates. Now, somebody asked me recently, what's that going to do to Comey's popularity? And what's that going to do to the popularity of the FBI now that you have both the Republican nominee and the Democratic nominee laying into him? And given the unpopularity of these two nominees, maybe it's actually going to – maybe this will move Comey's numbers up.
Good thinking. But I think we have to be worried about all the institutions in American politics right now. Everyone is involved in this, and everyone is fair game. Everyone is now seems to be fair game for attack. And if the suspicion is that even the director of the FBI could be trying to throw the election, what's left?
He just can't decide who to throw it to, I guess. Right.
I guess it changes day to day.
All right, let's try to get some facts on the table here. We have on the line our man at the Justice Department, Mike Levine. Are you there, Mike?
I'm here.
Hello. So what's the ground truth here? What can you please help us understand? First of all, you have these demands that Comey does something more than this 3-paragraph letter that he sent to members of Congress. Are we going to know in the coming days whether or not there is actually something here or not? Is Comey going to give us a further update, an actual substantive update before Election Day?
I think the answer is we don't know.
Listen, thank you.
We do know that as of now, we don't know anything. Comey said himself in his letter to Congress, we don't know if this is significant. So they're in the process right now of trying to look at these emails to really find out if they mean anything, if there's anything new, if this changes the conclusions that were announced back in July. The FBI's in a tough spot, and they sort of knew they'd be in a tough spot, but I don't think they realized they would be in this tough of a spot.
What's the theory of the case, though? What is potentially here?
Well, what they've been investigating from the start is whether classified information was mishandled. And as part of that, Comey himself has said they look at two things. First, is there classified information? And if there is, did people know that they were sending classified information? As of right now, with these new emails, we don't know if there is classified information. And even if they find classified information, the question then becomes, did anyone know that they were sending that classified information? So there's still a lot of steps to go before this is resolved.
Do we even know if these are new emails?
We don't. Clearly, we know something significant enough happened. They found something that was significant enough to cause all this, right? Comey wouldn't have sent a letter to Congress knowing it was going to get leaked and announcing this if it wasn't significant enough to look at. But again, we just don't know what's in them.
So Mike, climb into the director's head on this one, because a lot of folks were surprised when he came out like he did right before the conventions and said clean bill of health, but not really when he went to Congress and explaining and laying out the case that he had. It was fodder for both sides. He gets this new information that would reflect potentially on this and decides to go public in this very terse, kind of awkwardly worded statement to Congress. What was he hoping that would accomplish, and did he think that would be the end of the story?
Listen, when you talk to people at the FBI, they hoped it would accomplish cleaning up something that Comey had said. He had said under oath that this investigation was closed. He had basically indicated or said explicitly that they were not taking any more investigative action. And now they were taking investigative action. Now they were doing something more in the investigation. So according to his people, they felt compelled to tell Congress, hey, what I said before isn't accurate anymore.
So the question now to me is how much they can feel compelled to continue to talk. Now that he's broken the seal, now that he's spoken the first time, he's talking to members of Congress as well. We know they're going to expedite this process, try to review as many of these emails as possible. What is the expectation at the Justice Department? Are we going to get a status report, another update from the director?
I think that's very much up in the air. The FBI is caught in a place right now where they are being accused of saying something publicly that then impacts the election. So if they then say more, whatever it is that they say, that's going to only further inflame the accusations that they're renewing things that impact the election.
And is there any of this that has to do with internal department politics? We've been seeing some stories, and you've done some reporting about the internal pressures he has from other agents who either wanted charges here or wanted an investigation of the Clinton Foundation. How much was the pressure internally on Comey part of the story here that he felt like there was a need to go forward the way he has so far?
Listen, in terms of what the agents feel, everyone I have talked to on this in the FBI says that they are not aware of any agent that actually worked on this case that felt that Comey did not make the right decision. As I understand it, so therefore anyone who's speaking against what happened either was not
part of it. Yeah.
They're not actually seeing what the investigation truly turned up.
Well, have you heard a second guessing on the part of agents that are not part of this case?
Yes. I think certainly the reporters in Washington are hearing that there are there are people within the FBI. I've talked to people who certainly question how this was handled. But again, even those people, I spoke to someone last week who was questioning what Comey has been up to so far in this. But even he said, I don't know what he knows.
So, I think a lot of us had forgotten or just put it out of our minds that the FBI was actually investigating Anthony Weiner. How serious is that investigation, and what's going on there? And by the way, how much do they have to investigate? Either was communicating with this underage a girl on Twitter, or he wasn't. I mean, what? How many agents? How much of an investigation do you need to find out what exactly he was doing on his computer?
I am far more knowledgeable on national security investigations than those type of criminal investigations, but they all have one thing in common, which is intent. So again, it comes down to what did Anthony Weiner know? What did he intend to do? It's not just a matter of finding the existence of certain evidence.
What did Anthony Weiner know, and when did he know it?
And Mike, there's one other thing that's a little bit mysterious to me in this, and that's the suggestion that agents stumbled across this information as part of this unrelated investigation weeks ago. and that it was only in the last couple of days, as late as Thursday, that Director Comey was told about it, and then he felt compelled to go forward with it very, very quickly. What is your sense of the time frame? Does that say anything to you about the internal machinations, both how long it took to get to his desk and how quickly he turned that around into a public statement?
Listen, there are certainly questions out there right now about why it took so long for this to come to Comey's attention. But as described to us and described to ABC's own Pierre Thomas, there was just a very complicated process that happened once the agents looking into the Wiener matter first came across these emails. It was a complicated process where they then went to agents investigating the Clinton case, and then there was back and forth between them of what should they do next, and it works its way up, you know. So according to FBI folks, that took weeks.
All right. Well, let's go right now if we can to our friend Mr. Matt Miller, former spokesperson to the Justice Department. Matt, you and I have to say it caught me by surprise. You were out there almost immediately after news of this letter came out from Comey to Congress, highly critical of his actions. What's your beef with Comey, in short?
Well, I will say, you know, I heard you talk about all the people who have suddenly been critical. I was critical of Comey before being critical of Comey was cool. I started doing this in July with his press conference, where he really, I thought, violated a number of longstanding Department of Justice rules, precedents, practices. And that was the first in a series of what I believe are mistakes he made, then testifying to Congress in more detail than is usually done. Turning over evidence to Congress that's not usually done. And then the biggest mistake was Friday, when not only did he come out and talk about an ongoing investigation, but he did so right before an election, which violates one of the most longstanding policies of the department. Usually interpreted, you don't do anything like that within 60 days of an election, let alone 11.
So, but you don't think, I just want to be clear, you don't think that he's trying to swing the election for Donald Trump, do you? I mean, this is the allegation basically that Harry Reid has made, that he's violating the Hatch Act by using government resources, his government position, to be involved in politics. You don't think that – I mean, do you think this is incompetence on his part, misjudgment, or do you think he's actually trying to help Trump?
No, I don't think he's trying to swing the election to Trump, but I think he decided to do this and – didn't care if it would have an impact on the election. And that's actually a problem.
Really? That sounds admirable to me.
I'll put it this way. People say he would have been criticized one way or the other. The reason, you know, the best thing to do when you're in a tough situation like this is follow the rules and follow the precedent. And all the rules and precedent are that you don't do something like this right before an election. And the reason is, if you insert yourself into it, you are, by definition, putting your thumb on the scale, and that's what he should care about.
Matt, how much responsibility, again, as a former justice spokesperson, does Loretta Lynch bear in this? If she hadn't met with Bill Clinton on the tarmac, then a lot of folks are putting the same theory forward, which is she would have been in firm control of this investigation. She would have been able to tell Director Comey, even at this late stage, no, you're not going to go do this. By essentially disqualifying herself from oversight over all things Clinton-related, does she bear some scrutiny and responsibility here?
Well, two points to that. One, Evan Perez, a reporter for another network that will not be named, reported back
over
the summer.
Never mentioned CNN on this broadcast.
That's right. That's right. Reported over the summer that Comey made his decision to go it alone before the Lynch tarmac meeting happened. So I think he long intended to, you know, kind of follow his own counsel and do something independent here. Without a doubt, she shouldn't have had that meeting, and it did put her in a weaker position. But that said, you know, Comey actually reports to the Deputy Attorney General, a woman named Sally Yates. And if he thought Lynch was compromised in some fashion, which isn't his decision to make, but if he did think that, he could have talked to the Deputy Attorney General about this and followed her counsel. And from everything we know, both the AG and the Deputy Attorney General were telling him, you know, he should not issue this letter Friday.
Do you expect we'll hear from him again before the election?
Oh, I don't know. Mike pointed out all the reasons why it's hard to think they're going to be finished with the investigation before Election Day. I do wonder if there's something more he can come out and say about what they're doing. I mean, that'd be unusual be really unprecedented, but, you know, we're in pretty unusual territory here.
What would you want him to do? I mean, you've been highly critical. What do you think he should do at this point?
Well, so there's no perfect solution. Like, you know, let's put on the table, he should have never done this. But having done it, I think what he owes the public is to now quickly assess these emails, find out, you know, are they all duplicates? Are there any that relate to Secretary Clinton? Try to narrow the scope of facts and present to the public some kind of accounting of what the FBI knows and what it doesn't. It's not going to be able to make a final determination about a case, I'm sure, unless it's just obvious that these are all duplicates. But he ought to come forward and give a little more clarity so the people that are, you know, kind of, you know, you've seen all this innuendo and speculation about what it is, you know, so that it's much harder for Republicans to make hay out of this in a way that's, you know, not based on facts.
Hey, Matt, it's Mike. I have a quick question. I know that the FBI is supposed to act independently, but doesn't the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General have the authority to direct Comey not to send that letter?
Yes, they do. By all accounts, they didn't. I've been wondering what would have happened had they actually told him. I think there are a couple
impeachment hearings.
Lynch is probably not there much longer anyway, so they'd have to hurry. I think one, he might have just disobeyed them, said, you know, I don't really care. He's done that before. And two, he might have threatened to resign, which is an overreaction and which provoked a crisis. But when you're dealing with someone like him who's a little unpredictable, you got to consider that possibility.
Did people get Jim Comey wrong from the start here? I remember the reputation, and a lot of this was forged during his time under the Bush administration, that this was a guy that, you know, no nonsense, justice first. It's about the investigations. Did he fashion himself as more of a player than we realized, or is he naive to the ways of Washington so much that he's gotten in over his head?
I think he's the opposite of naive. I think he actually is a man of integrity, but he's also a man that cares very much about the image of being a man of integrity. Mike could tell you he cultivates the press and cultivates his image a lot more than the previous FBI director ever did. And I think sometimes
anything more than zero, it's relative.
Yeah, that's true, but it's a lot more than zero. I think that self-regard that he holds himself in, which is not an unusual trait in Washington, obviously, has a tendency to slip over into self-righteousness sometimes. And you've seen it here where he places so much value in his own judgment. He puts it before the rules and practices that bind every other employee of the Justice Department.
Do you think Loretta Lynch stays on? It sounds like you think that she leaves. I mean, I've heard a lot of speculation that the you know, Clinton White House keeps her on as AG.
I think probably not. I think the situation at DOJ right now is untenable. I'm not sure what the solution is to it, but you cannot have an FBI director who's completely accountable to no one. You have to be independent, but you also have to be
Edgar Hoover,
accountable.
Anyone?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the problem.
That's the point, right? So, that's why the reforms.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so there has to be a solution here. It seems unlikely he's going to resign, and certainly no one's going to fire him.
The 10-year term, the idea behind the 10-year term was one to make sure it doesn't become a nearly 50-year term like we had with J. Edgar Hoover, but also to underline the fact that the FBI director is, in theory, above politics, will serve multiple presidents, has a degree of independence. But, of course, the president can fire the FBI director. I mean, do you expect that she fire? I mean, how, she either fires him, that creates a massive, controversy, or she has to work hand in hand with an FBI director that has called her extremely careless and that her own people have accused of trying to mess with her election.
It's an extremely tough situation. If she were to fire him, it would consume, you know, maybe the first year of her presidency. It would be such an issue, such a problem. I think the more likely outcome is, you know, there's a very tense, awkward relationship, and maybe with some time they get over it. But certainly you have to think there are going to be some hard feelings on both sides.
You think? Just a little bit about this kind of surprise.
Yeah, right. Let bygones be bygones.
Just one last thing from me, Matt. I just want to get a sense of your read with your former colleagues over there. If there's a sense of the mood at the Department of Justice and the FBI right now, I can't imagine that many agents or Justice Department employees like being in the headlines for these reasons a week before the election. This has got to be viewed as a pretty bad day for the Bureau, no?
It is a crazy atmosphere over there right now, and the one of the best examples. You look at all the leaks that we've seen in the last few days. The Wall Street Journal story today is an especially good example. And
this is the one with the 650,000 emails on the computer.
Yeah, that's right. But Mike's obviously not going to talk about his sources. But you know, I think all the reporters covering the beat right now will tell you. You know, there's a time when a lot of people inside the government won't talk to you, and then their interests change, and they can't wait to talk to you. And it seems like that's happening right now, where you've got people in the FBI and people at DOJ who are rushing to kind of, you know, tell their side of the story, because if not, you know, they'll be unfairly tarnished. And so it's a good time to be a reporter covering DOJ. It's a really tough time to be working there.
All right, Matt Miller, we know you have to go. Thank you for joining us. We will catch up with you soon as this goes on. One, before you leave, I just need your very quick prediction. How many seats did the Democrats pick up in the Senate? Did they win control? Because we know you used to be involved in such things in another life.
Yeah. At one point in my life, I cared about politics.
Yes.
I think we end up with 51 seats.
51 seats.
Maybe 52, but right now I'm taking a little bit under and going to 51.
Bullish. I like that. Going out there. All right, Matt.
All right. Matt Miller, former DOJ spokesperson. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, I don't know. I don't know where it goes, Mr. Klein, but we have a much tighter race today than we had last week. Now, in fairness, the race was already tightening.
Oh, I see some immediate impact that I think is undeniable. Which, first, the Clinton campaign had a carefully calibrated closing strategy: 10 days of early vote and celebrities out there and Democratic surrogates out there, and this is going to be all about motivating the base every day. A new message, whether it's security, whether it's the importance of women voting. All of that is on pause right now. You cannot break through with any message like that as long as this is hanging out there. And this day and the next couple of days probably consumed by this storyline. The other thing is Donald Trump, who didn't have a closing message that anyone could identify, found one. One just dropped in his lap courtesy of the FBI director. He has something to close with. Now, is that enough to change the dynamics that was always going to favor her narrowly and in the battleground states? Not sure about that. But this is the kind of big news event that he needed. Almost perfectly cast all the way down to the details about Anthony Weiner for Donald Trump's message to resonate.
It's just unbelievable. And you know, the Clinton team, you can sense that they are angry about this story. They are genuinely angry at the FBI. They are angry at the way the story has been covered by us, by other news organizations. You know, they had that carefully calibrated final stretch strategy game plan that was becoming to be as much about padding her lead in the Electoral College, about bringing along a Democratic Senate as well as a decisive electoral victory for her. And I think that's also, you know, a bit on pause. My sense is they are still quite confident that they will win this election. The election still, you know, it hasn't fundamentally changed. There's no evidence that it's fundamentally changed beyond some slight tightening. But they're, you know, I mean, this is thrown them into a bit of chaos. And, you know, we talk about our friends at 538 that give their, you know, their kind of percentage chance of various outcomes. Last week on this podcast, we had our friend Micah Cohen say that the chances of a Trump victory were at about 18%. He kind of vividly said that's a little bit like the odds of whether or not you get killed playing Russian roulette. You know, which sounded vivid. Well, now, I don't know if you saw this, Rick, the 538 now puts the percentage of a chance of a Trump victory up closer to 23-24%, which is essentially exactly the chance that our friends at 538 put at the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, winning the next two games.
Well, they got to win those two in Cleveland. As you know. So like, there's an apt analogy here to the kind of history-making, although this would be bigger. This isn't just coming down from a 3-1 deficit. I mean, this is coming down from a 3-0 deficit when you're losing in the eighth back this way. But I think the dynamics are there, and you're going to see the Democrats start to panic, to freak out if the public polling confirms what they're seeing in this. And this has been a bad couple of days for the campaign. There's no way around that. I'm not convinced that Donald Trump is able to capitalize it with enough time out there. And I know a lot of Republican strategists that I've talked to in the last few days aren't there yet, but they are feeling the ground on this. And I think you're right. The Clinton folks are in a bit of a crisis mode in trying to navigate this, and they have gone to war with the director of the FBI. Another one of those we never thought we would have seen this one coming.
Okay, well, that will do it for this week's edition of Powerhouse Politics. Please take a moment to rate and review the show on iTunes. It helps us reach out to other people to help them discover the show. You can also find both of us on Twitter. I'm at John Carl. JONKARL, and Rick is over at Rick Klein.
And you can find us every day. Don't forget, all week this week and right through the election.
Every single day.
Bonus podcast.
Now, this show was produced by the great Avery Miller and Ryan Kessler, the man that really created this show. So we thank both of them, and we will have our next daily podcast tomorrow right here. For Rick Klein, I'm Jonathan Carl. Thank you for listening.